This quote is from Living with Kindness. Upeksha, equanimity, is a spiritual quality of a particularly elevated kind. There are traces of it in ordinary experience, perhaps in the tranquility that can be found in nature, in the experience of standing alone in the forest, when the air is still and the trees stand silently around you. But upekkha goes far beyond even that kind of stillness. It has an intense, definite, even dhyanic quality of its own. And that is only to describe upekkha in the mundane sense. The fully developed Brahma-vihara is peacefulness of an indescribably subtle and intense kind. Infused as it is with insight, it is as though there is nothing but that peace. It is truly universal and utterly immovable. It is not just an absence of conflict. It has a magnitude and solidity all of its own. Since it partakes of the nature of reality itself, no kind of disturbance can affect it in any way. So upekkha is definitely on a different level to the other Brahma-viharas. It's on a higher level. And we need enough sustained concentration and immersion in the other Brahma-viharas to attempt it. Traditionally, it's said that you cultivate upeksha from the third dhyana, but we're not going to worry too much about that. You need a firm base of metta, and you need practice of karuna and mudita in order to do the upekkha bhavana. So just to go back on our journey so far, we started with metta, which is the root Brahma-vihara. Then we went on to karuna, which is metta coming into contact with suffering, and then mudita, metta coming into contact with joy. And upeksha brings them all together, and it adds an element of insight. So upeksha doesn't need a strong emotional trigger. It's very subtle and includes the awareness that all beings suffer and that all beings experience joy. And upekkha, this is important, upekkha is developed by stressing the sameness of positive emotion. So it is the sameness of positive emotion towards all. So in a sense, it's a little bit like the last stage of the metta, where you're trying to develop that sameness of response towards all. So if you have upekkha, you have the same response to your friend or your enemy, whether it's just a straight response of metta, or if they're experiencing suffering, or if they're experiencing joy. You just respond equally. Sometimes the example is given that if you're going to meet a friend and your friend didn't turn up and somebody else turned up instead, it wouldn't matter. If you had upekkha, it wouldn't matter at all. You'd be equally glad to see them as you would your friend. Not usually our experience, but that's what we're aiming for. So if you have upekkha, you don't just have positive emotions of metta and karuna and mudita towards your friends. You have those emotions equally towards all. And as the stock phrase goes, may all beings dwell in the immeasurable equanimity, which has neither near nor far, attraction or aversion. So it's stressing this quality of sameness of response, sameness of emotional response, sameness of emotional positivity towards all. And we practice upekkha to overcome our prejudice, to overcome our likes and dislikes. And we're obviously not going to get that straight away, but we can just actually start to move that. And in the upekkha practice, looking for that sameness of response, more of a sameness of response, feeling more for the joys and the sufferings of our enemies, as we do for our friends. So in addition to that, there's this insight element. And the insight element is insight into karma. So that the joys and sufferings that we experience are, at least to some extent, to quite a large extent, the result of how we respond to different circumstances. And the result of our own past actions, whether body, speech or mind. So we inherit the effects of our actions, and our actions in the present condition what we become in the future. So we're recreating ourselves from moment to moment. And the Buddha said something like, if you want to know why a person is the way that they are today, you look at their past actions. If you want to know how they're going to be in the future, you look at their present actions. So Buddhism's not saying that all our happiness and suffering is the result of our actions. There are many other factors as well. There are the five niyamas, which we're all familiar with. But it's saying that there is a part of our suffering and our happiness that we can do something about. And that's the way we respond to situations. We can change the way that we respond, the way we feel, the way we think, our attitudes and so on. And it's amazing, really. It's remarkable that we live in what in effect is an ethical universe. We live in a universe where skillful actions based on love, understanding, and generosity lead to happiness, they lead to an expansion of consciousness, whereas actions based on greed, hatred and delusion lead to contracted, narrow states of mind. And if we have contact with the Dharma, if we have awareness, we have a choice. We have a choice as to what we can become from moment to moment. So in the Upekkha Bhavana, we're moving away from seeing others in terms of our prejudices, in terms of our likes and dislikes, and we're viewing them more as they are, as all subject to karma. And we can feel a real solidarity with others because of that. And we're seeing that to a great extent, we're all responsible for our happiness and our suffering. And this can lead to a greater sense of connectedness and solidarity with other people. And it counteracts our partiality, it counteracts our prejudices. So I want to move on to the practice itself, and the practice is in five stages. And we start off by developing a base of metta. And in the second stage, we bring to mind a neutral person. And the reason we bring to mind a neutral person is because they're the best person to develop equanimity towards, because we don't have any strong response for or against them. And from a base of metta, We respond to them. So if they're experiencing, if it's just straight metta that's required, we respond with metta. If they're suffering, we respond with karuna. If they're experiencing joy, we respond with mudita. That comes naturally because we've been immersing ourselves in the other brahmaviharas. So we just respond appropriately to whatever's happening to them, to the neutral person. And then we drop in a sentence. And it's just like dropping a pebble into a still pool. And as it breaks the surface, it sends out ripples and it sinks down into the depths. So we're not thinking about this. We're just dropping it into the depths of our minds. And it's a phrase. And it may be something like, we are heirs to our actions. We inherit our actions. Or actions have consequences. Or we are the owners of our actions. So find a phrase that's resonant for you. And it's just like you drop this phrase in and you just let it sink down to the depths. And you continue to respond with metta and the other brahmaviharas to the neutral person. And this phrase is just there in the background. You're not thinking about it. It's just like a background awareness. Actions have consequences. We inherit our actions. And I think I said in one of the other talks, it's a bit like when we hear somebody's life story and we understand, oh yeah, That's why the way they are. That's why they are the way they are. And we don't need to know much about them. We just know that the way that they are is the result of their past actions and the way that they've responded to circumstances in the past. They've created themselves. They've brought themselves into being through creating their own karma. And out of that, you'll be quite surprised the effect it has. There's this deeper sort of understanding starts to emerge. Maybe not in the practice, maybe you notice it outside the practice. And there's a greater patience. There's a greater understanding with other people. There's a greater sympathy. And you see that we're all in the same boat in relation to karma. This, in a way, unites us all. So that's what we do, and we develop this positive emotion towards the neutral person, we respond appropriately with whatever brahmavihara is called for, and we drop in this phrase just from time to time, and just let it sink in, and you'll find your way around it in the practice. It's, as I say, it's more subtle than the other practices, it's quite a subtle practice. In the third stage, we bring to mind the good friend, and just the same with the good friend. Responding appropriately with the brahmaviharas to whatever their circumstances are, and then dropping in this phrase. Fourth stage, the enemy. The same. And remember, particularly with the enemy, but also particularly with the enemy, you're looking for a sameness of response. So you're looking to overcome your prejudices. You're looking to respond with the same metta, the same karuna, the same mudita to the enemy as a friend. So you're gradually moving your consciousness towards that. Gradually turning your emotions around, and rather than relating it to the enemy in terms of likes and dislikes or prejudice, you're trying to relate to them on the basis of karma, that they're the product of their karma to a large extent. And then bring to mind ourselves and the other three people, and breaking the barriers between us. And this is where we can really start to look for more sameness of response. And then expanding outwards and expanding into the world. And just seeing that all beings are subject to karma. This is a universal law. And this awareness, it changes our response to them. They're the same as us in terms of karma. So that's the practice. And as usual, there are near enemies and far enemies. And the near enemy is indifference. So it's just ordinary, dull indifference. It's not your problem. It's a failure of imagination in a way. It's just indifference to people. So the antidote to this, of course, is to connect more deeply. And interestingly enough, the antidote to indifference, which is the near enemy of upeksha, is metta. So you need more metta. You need more metta for them. The far enemy is cold indifference. And I just want to explain that a bit. It's where you cut off from people. It's a callous cutting off. It's a form of aversion, but it's a sort of cold aversion. It's not hot like anger. It's a sort of cold aversion. And I was just reflecting on this, and it occurs to me that in a way it's the extreme of prejudice. If you have strong prejudices, there are certain people who you just refuse to see. You refuse to acknowledge as other human beings. You just cut off from them. You refuse to relate to them as another human being. So that's the far enemy. You don't acknowledge their existence. So if you feel that, you need to start to thaw out. You need to start to warm up. And to, first of all, just take in their humanity. And again, the antidote is to connect more strongly, and you need more metta. And I guess also, as well as enemies far and near, there are probably friends of upekkha, so that are in the same sort of family, and these are qualities like patience, non-reactivity. Calm. In a way, considerateness or deliberation, where you consider your response to others before just acting. And spaciousness. There's a real spaciousness about this particular Brahmavihara. Okay, and lastly, just for the sake of completeness, there are three types of upekkha, traditionally. So the first type is upekkha as a dhyana factor. It's the main factor in the fourth dhyana. Secondly, as a brahmavihara. And lastly, as transcendental axiality, the imperturbability of enlightenment, the immovability of enlightenment, the immovable state. And what this tends to suggest is that upekkha as a brahmavihara has something of a transcendental nature to it. It has something of the quality of enlightenment to it.